Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're here on a hot Thursday evening. We'll take you right up until 7 o'clock. Brought to you, as always, by Casamigos Tequila. Brought to you by those who drink it. JJ at 7. Warm day today again. Supposed to be, unless they just missed their calling here, tomorrow's supposed to be a washout. And we haven't had many days like that, and we haven't had a lot of rain. But they are predicting a tremendous amount of rain starting around 5, 6 a.m. and really inches and inches of rain tomorrow where it's a complete washout. So we'll see if that's the case. But it could be. So if you got your golf in today, you're good. And I know people have been flocking to the golf courses in record numbers. Talking about golf today, Morikawa's shot a 7-under. So far he leads the workday at Muirfield. They're at Muirfield 2 weeks in a row, which is very strange. I understand that. There's a lot of people playing this week. And right now, the very talented Morikawa leads the field right now. But there's a bunch of guys right there at 5-under, 4-under, 3-under. There's a lot of the usual suspects. So a whole lot of golf to be played, that's for sure. And plenty of guys in the mix. I want to see if somebody who's big threw in a really like terrible round. How about this? Bubba Watson shot 7-over, but no one thought he would win anyway. I don't see anybody else at the 3-over, at the 2-over. Koepka was 2-over. You know, Koepka's not motivated to win these tournaments. Wait for the majors with him. Justin Rose, 2-over. Now we're at Rahm is at even par. Spieth at even par. Leishman even par. Mickelson even par. He's got one hole to play. Minus two, Cantley. Hovland, minus three. Masayama, 5-under. Zach Johnson, 5-under. And Morikawa 7 under. So that's it after one day of the tournament. I remember they're back next week. Jack's tournament. Tiger's going to play in that. They were going to have spectators. Now they're not. But Jack's tournament next week there as we get a little deeper into the golf season. We're still a couple of weeks away from baseball. We'll hope and wait and see what happens. We mentioned yesterday about the ramifications of what it meant that the Ivy League canceled. We're waiting to see what everybody else is going to do in college football. No Ivy sports. We know that they haven't yet committed to a spring season. They may do that in the near future, but they haven't yet committed, and we'll see where that leaves college football. Baseball right now, 2 weeks away. It's supposed to begin 2 weeks from this evening with the Yankees and the Nats. 2 weeks from tonight. So if we can keep things from getting crazy for 2 weeks, we could have baseball back. The other story is the Met ownership. And as I told you yesterday, don't react to every twist, turn, leak, story that's leaked, information that's leaked. Hey, all you care about is the team being sold? The answer is yes. And you hope it's sold to somebody who has the resources to give you what you want as a fan. That's all. Like I said yesterday, we would make Steve Cohen the favorite for a variety of reasons, including A, he's got the most money, and B, he is already a partial owner of the team. He is motivated by every account. So I would not make him a lock by any stretch of the imagination, but I would make him the favorite right now to get the team, although we're only in the initial bidding. And like I said, don't react to every story. See, it's going to be covered like it's an event. And really all you're going to get is just information that they want you to have that they feel impacts negotiations. That's the only motivation they have to put it out. There's no motivation otherwise for that. You want to get the message out that you want the other people who are bidding to hear. That's it. That's who that message is for. None of this is for the fans. They're not worried about the fans right now. The fans will be dealt with when the new ownership is in place. That's all. Who's to say one owner is better than the other owner anyway? What you're going to wait and see is what that owner brings in terms of motivation, resources, and dedication to putting a winner on the field. And being able to put, they're all capable of putting the right people in place. They've done that in other businesses. They can do it in this business. It doesn't mean it's not difficult to do. It's not easy to do. And it's not automatic just because you've been successful in business, you're going to be successful in this business. There are plenty of guys in the NFL and throughout sports who have bought franchises after being very successful and have run those franchises into the ground. Some run into the ground by design. But others run into the ground because of inept management. And it has happened on numerous, numerous occasions. But don't let anybody tell you that there's not a market for the Mets. It's ridiculous. And that the franchise is not a valuable. It's somehow in this world of chaos we're in right now with the pandemic, that somehow the franchise is not worth anything or is not worth anywhere near what it was. Nonsense. Look long term. Now, if the pandemic is going to be with us and we're going to have no spectators in the seats for the next 15 years, yes, well, you know what? Life as we know it is over, if that's the case. So you can't look at baseball in that vacuum because everything will have radically changed if that's the case. You're going to go on the premise that, you know, a year from now or some reasonable amount of time after that, that you're going to be able to put spectators in the fans and stands when we're back to normal. At that point, the franchise has enormous value. But the smart player understands that the winning ticket from an ownership standpoint involves option on the real estate around the stadium and the network. Two very, very important ingredients. As far as the Mets on the field, we'll touch on that with Eddie C. when we come back. All right, Eddie will join us in a couple of minutes. He's doing something with one of the players right now. Now, you've seen that in recent minutes that you've seen these conferences go to conference only, okay? looks like all of them, three of them have. Big Ten announced it would go move the conference-only schedule for the fall. ACC and Pac-10 have done the same. Big 12 and SEC are expected to follow. What do independents do? And it leads to the obvious question, what does Notre Dame do? Okay, that does not mean any of them are playing yet. And I think the fact that they've gone to conference only, all right, which means some of the great rivalries are already gone. You know, Clemson, South Carolina is an example. You know, something like that. You know, you can go think about all the, you know, I mean, a million of them. Notre Dame will never go to a conference. People think, oh, this is it. Notre Dame's not going to go to a conference. Notre Dame will not go to a conference. They will not do it. Now, this year could bring anything because now you're talking about a streamline. The fact that they already moved to a conference only. See, I told you the other day, once the Ivy moved, it was going to cause a huge groundswell. The Ivy moved yesterday, and now everybody's starting to move. This is just the first step to conference only. We don't know if they're going to play. I think they're going to play in the spring if they're going to play at all. I think they're going to back it off and try and play in the spring. So I don't think Notre Dame's going to play, but we don't know yet. We're not there yet. But obviously Notre Dame right now doesn't have a place to play because if it's conference only, they're not playing anybody. And Notre Dame is not a conference member. You know that. Nor will they ever be. Joe in Manhattan. What's up, Joe? Joe going once. Yes, Joe, what's up?
I just wanted to ask you, what do you think is the best decision for the Notre Dame football team since the ACC and the Big Ten?
Well, they're all playing conference. Listen, we don't know that anybody's playing. All they've said is they're only playing a conference schedule this year. We don't know that they're playing at all. They've just abbreviated their schedule is all they've done so far. The cancellation of the Ivy was a huge move because, remember, the Ivy has such stature and they have so much power inside their walls because they have the best scientists, the best doctors, the best academicians all inside their schools. So when they move based on very sound logic. And that's why you knew when they move that other people will move after. I think this is only the first move. I don't think they're going to play this fall. I really don't in college football. I think they'll wind up moving into the spring.
What if they go with the Big Ten?
What do you mean? Notre Dame is not going to play in a conference. I'm telling you right now. They're not going to join a conference now for 1 year to do this. It's not going to happen. They're probably not going to play. Look at already. What does Notre Dame do with their USC game, which is the biggest rivalry they have? I mean, come on. They're not going to do that.
I don't know.
What'd you say?
Big Ten teams are really close.
Listen. The most, what is the most long-standing series that Notre Dame plays?
First USC.
And what conference are they in? So, I mean, the idea you think Notre Dame's going to the Big Ten, Notre Dame's allegiance is to the ACC in every other sport. It is not to the Big Ten. Now, come on. Notre Dame is going to get left in the cold here, but there might not be a cold here. There might not be anything here. This is just the first step. What it shows you is they're not ready to have a season. That's what you learn today is the Power Five. I told you yesterday, let's see now what the Power Five does once Ivy moved. I told you yesterday when Ivy moved, it was a sign that everything is going to break down. Now you have the leagues come out today and say, we're only playing conference games. That's just the first step. And it's an enormous step because it cuts out some enormous games. It cuts out any Notre Dame game. It cuts out great rivalries like Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia Tech. I could go on and on. There's a million of them. So you don't have any of these games anymore because they're going to play. And now Notre Dame, remember, doesn't play in the conference, so they play everybody. How does it affect them? These schools, they didn't say we're playing conference games only plus Notre Dame if they're on our schedule. You didn't hear that. But remember, this is just step one. That's all this is. But the Ivy was incredibly meaningful. And the Ivy has not committed yet to football in the spring. All they've said is they will not play any sports until 2021. That's all they said. Tom in Cornwall. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Mike. How you doing? I just wanted to touch in with you because I totally agree with you with the domino effect because I coach high school baseball, and in the spring, I remember that Friday, the message came out that the Ivy Leagues are canceling spring sports, and then by the afternoon, the Patriot League had gone.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, high school. So you're right.
Ben, the Ivy. Everybody understands that the brain power resides in the Ivy League. So when the Ivy League moves, it means that they have gone to their presidents and they've said, listen, what does the president do? He goes down the hall to the leading scientist at his school and says, tell me what we should do. And the scientist says, here's what you should do. Okay? And that bottom line is that's what happens in Harvard and Yale and Penn and Princeton. They get together, and when they move, the rest of the world says, hey, the smart guys did this, so we're doing this.
Well, you're right. And they're doing. They had announced a couple days ago, I guess it was, that they are completely online until January. So
yes. Now again, we don't know that yet. You're right. We don't know who, and that's going to be very much an individual thing with colleges and in school districts as to whether they're going to have, and really a lot of it's going to have to do with a lot of things. Remember. School districts that have more money have a better chance to prepare their school for what they need in terms of safeguarding than schools that are in poor neighborhoods and don't have as big a budgets. We know that. That's just the way it is. Does that have an impact? Now, I saw Cuomo say that he wasn't going to make any decisions on schools in the state of New York until August. Hey, listen, the bottom line is, it's starting to look like there will be no real meaningful sports in the fall in college. We don't know that yet for sure. All you've seen them do now is back off to where they're only playing conference schedules. That's a very big move, though. That's a very big move. It takes a lot of big games out of a lot of these schools. Think about it. Think about some of these crossover games that are played every year. Think about some of the big rivalry games that are played every year. So these are very, very big games. SEC, think of them going outside the league and playing certain teams. Or the Big Ten going outside, Michigan playing Notre Dame, or, you know, Notre Dame-Purdue, Notre Dame-USC as an example. And Notre Dame plays into this in a very, obviously, very, very big way. Rich in Long Island, what's up, Rich?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good.
Just real quick on Mahomes, he got an exorbitant amount of money. I understand that, but I always wondered that when a player gets that kind of money, does it bode well for the coach at all? Like, does it do anything for him down the line? Put feathers in his cap at all? Like, you know, on his marketability? Because he really, I mean, he developed Mahomes. Mahomes has incredible physical talent, but I mean, he comes out and says that he didn't even learn how to read defenses until late into 2018. So Reed had something to do with that. Does it bode well for him when he gets that kind of money?
I think anytime a coach wins with a player, they have taken a great step together, and they've built the bond. Mahomes and Andy and Mahomes have a bond now that lasts forever. Okay, just like Walsh and Montana did, just like Brady and Belichick have, just like Parcells had with Lawrence Taylor, let's say, okay, you know, with your greatest player, okay? So the bottom line is anytime they win together, the bond is developed. And the coach, his job is to win and win with the great player. What the player makes doesn't impact the player, the coach. It really doesn't. The coach doesn't say, wow, I really feel like I accomplished something because Mahomes is making X. No. But what he's saying is, I brought this kid in. I saw something. I was bold. I went and traded up for him. And he turned out to be everything that I dreamt about. 2 years in, he breaks records. He's the only quarterback by 25 to win the MVP and win a Super Bowl for his team, the only quarterback in history. So they've done great things together. So, yes, they're already – Andy and Mahomes are really bonded. What will really bond them will be when they win their second one together. Then they go through history together. That's the way it works. Once they win their second. Dean, that could happen this year. Dean in Durham, what's up, Dean?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good.
What was coming out of stuff on the ACC, I read today that if they went to a conference-only schedule, Notre Dame would be included in the mix.
Hasn't agreed to that. Notre Dame said tonight that they have not agreed to that.
No, but the offer would be extended.
Well, of course. They've wanted Notre Dame in the league for everybody's wanted Notre Dame in their league forever. Forever. Notre Dame will never go to a – will never become part of a conference. I'm not saying for 1 year they won't say – because of craziness, we can only play with this league this year. I'm not saying they wouldn't amend their schedule for 1 year, but Notre Dame will never, ever join a conference in football. That would be a one-year thing. Now, for 1 year, they might have to, because of if everyone's doing something, they might have to line up with somebody for 1 year. That's possible. I would not say that's impossible because you're talking about a one-year special thing, just like you're seeing in baseball this year. Okay, a lot of things that are happening this year are not going to happen again. That could happen for Notre Dame this year because otherwise they don't have a schedule. But is Notre Dame going to go to a conference full-time? No, they will not do that. They will not do that. And they will not commit to that. Back after this. All right, we're back. Let's touch on the Mets with Eddie. Obviously, fans are hearing the buzz about the sale, but you know that could take months. It could take weeks, could take months. There's going to be a lot of rumors. You'll find out when you find out. There's going to be a lot of twists and turns, probably. If I had to guess, I would make Cohen the favorite, but I would not make him the overwhelming favorite. But I'd say there's four groups that are probably serious, and he's on top of the list. But let's talk about the team with Eddie. Eddie, welcome. How are you?
Good, Mike. How you doing?
All right. A couple questions. Number one, who closes, Eddie?
I think it's Diaz, and I've thought that all along. I think he's going to be the guy. It's interesting, though. You know, Luis Rojas has not wavered at all from what he was telling us in February and March. Every time we bring it up, what's going to be the setup, and who the setup guy is, what's the order out in the bullpen. He brings them all in. He's got Betances and Familia and Lugo all in the mix. So. He hasn't wavered on that, and I don't know when he will. I mean, at some point, I think when you're probably down after those Yankee exhibition games on the 17th and 18th, or 18th and 19th, whatever it is, those final 5 days, he'll probably make some decisions then. But up until then, I don't think so. But, I'd be shocked if it's not Edwin Diaz. I really would.
If the manager is different than last manager, how is he different?
Well, I think he's kept all his options open. Now, that may be his choice, and it may be the organization's choice. I don't know which. I honestly don't, because, when spring training got cut short, it's kind of hard. You don't probably have the rapport that you have, and you don't talk to as many people. You just didn't have the time. So, that part of it is it leaves you a little bit short. But if he's – I think he's thoroughly prepared. I think he knows exactly
what kind of guy is he going to be. Is he going to be easy on the players? Is he going to be a disciplinarian? Is he going to be what's his way of doing business?
It's kind of hard to figure in a sense, Mike, because I think he's not going to be a strict disciplinarian. I think he knows too many of these guys as they've come up through the system to do that. But at the same time, I think they know he's the boss and he's the man. So they have respect for him. I do know that. And even the veteran players, even the Cespedeses and the Canos, they have respect for Luis. And, those guys are pretty much his age, he's in his late 30s. So I think that, he'll command respect. I do think he's going to be tough. I think he'll be firm. Let's put it that way. And I do think he's going to try to use his roster. I think there are going to be situations where guys are not going to want to sit, but they're going to have to sit. They're just going to have to take a game off because he wants them to be fresh. I think we've seen that in the way he's kind of utilized players, moving them all around already. J.D. Davis in the outfield, J.D. Davis at third base, Cespedes here, there, both a DH and an outfielder. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. I think the two things that he knows he's going to need are depth. I think everybody wants that, whether you have 60 or 162. The other is versatility, and if he has them both, and health, which is the most important thing, I think he thinks he'll be all right.
We're talking with Eddie C. about the Mets.
is this a teaching staff, an instructional staff, or is it a staff that kind of lets players just be?
No, I think it's instructional, yeah. I mean, you have a guy like Gary DeSarcina, the third base coach. He works with JD very much at third base. He's the infield coach as well. I think Chili Davis is that way as well. I mean, I think he's very instructional, too. Now, Chili's an old-school guy. You know, I don't think he's going to try to revamp swings. He works with what he has and what's best for guys. I think that's the way he's always worked. But they like Chili a lot. There's no question about that. So I think that and Hefner is young as well, too. Hef doesn't, this is his first, pitching coach opportunity. But he gets along well with all the guys. They have a lot of respect for him. He stayed on top of things when, they were off for the 2.5 months, from mid-March or so till they got back here. And honestly, Mike, you look at the pitchers right now. That was one thing I think that all of us were kind of just wondering about what kind of shape they were going to be in and how much they'd have to ramp up. These guys are pretty much good to go almost right now.
Yeah, the pitchers have been ahead of the hitters, no question about it. Yeah.
But they usually are in spring training. But the thing is, you didn't know after the ramp down and then trying to ramp back up in a spring training two, so to speak, and how much work they did by being away. But a lot of guys found opportunities, like Steven Matz, said he found an opportunity at least once a week to get out there for four innings and pitch to live hitters. There were a lot of – he was in the Nashville area, so there were a lot of players around the area that got together and worked that way. DeGrom was on the mound a couple of times a week. So a lot of guys are more advanced or further along, I think, than you might think.
All right, Eddie, the Cespedes, what do the Mets perceive his role to be, and what does Cespedes perceive his role to be?
I think Cespedes perceives his role to be 60 games playing every day.
Where?
Yeah, well, I think he, they've been working him in the outfield. Now, he really hasn't done a lot of running, so that's going to have to be proven over time. I think that he's probably going to DH a lot, but at the same time, they have a number of guys they can use there. But I do think they want to see what they can get out of him.
Is Cespedes going to cut into Davis's time?
I don't necessarily think so because, if Cespedes is in left, you can have JD as the DH, and you could have McNeil at third, and if Cano's playing at second, that's fine. You could certainly have JD as the DH. JD and Dom may have to split some time if Cespedes plays a lot in the outfield. Now, I think what the Mets would rather have, if you have a healthy Cespedes and a guy who can move around out there with his arm, I think we've been through this a million times. He probably should play right with his arm, but he's not going to.
Well, he won't do that. He won't do that.
He's not doing that. But are you better off with – and listen, I like Dom Smith as a defensive player, but he's a first baseman. Okay, he's not a
right
fielder.
And he's a good hitter, too.
And he's a very good hitter. But yeah. I think ideally, if you had a healthy Cespedes who could move out there with his arm, you'd want him in left field as opposed to either JD or Dom. That's just my feeling. And I think that's what they're looking at. Now, I don't know if they can have that. That's what they're trying to find out. If they can't have it, well, then he'll DH a little bit more, and you're going to have to use JD and Dom. It's not a bad way to go either. You want their bats in the lineup. There's no question. But defensively, you're probably a little bit better off with Cespedes if he's healthy and can move.
See, I think I'm talking with Eddie C about the Mets. You know that Pete's going to play every day. You know that he's going to play. If he's healthy, he's going to play 58 of these games, right? You got to figure,
probably,
right around there, okay? And maybe you DH him once a week or once every 2 weeks to keep him healthy, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And obviously, when you look at the rest of that team, there's a couple other guys there that are the foundation guys. The one thing I think that they're not going to do, which I think they should do, is I think they should – find a position to give McNeil to play rather than move him all over to play his games. And I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to wind up playing him everywhere, which I really don't think is fair to him because I think he could become a star. And I think it's going to be hard to be a star
when you're playing four positions. It just is. It's very difficult to do.
Who is this, McNeil? You're talking
about?
No, I honestly, I think, Mike, that he is going to play the majority of games at third base. That's
but what about when Cano's off? They're going to put him at second, right?
Yes, I do believe, because he's
so Cano's not going to play every day, so you know Cano's going to miss two games a week. So McNeil's going to play those 2 days at second, and maybe Davis plays third those days, okay? Right. Yep. The bottom line, though, is I think you don't want to keep moving McNeil all over the field. He can be Ben Zobrist, I understand, but he's better than that. He could be better than that as a player. I really believe that. He could actually be a big-time player. I think he deserves to have a position. It probably should be second base, but Cano's here, so it's not going to happen. You could give him third base and say no one else plays third, but that doesn't make sense because you're going to want to play him at second when Cano's out. So I guess McNeil's going to have to just get used to playing a lot of positions.
Yeah, he's worked out some in the outfield, too. I think there are times when you might move him there. The good thing to me about McNeil is that, you know, I think the majority of games he is going to start at third base. That doesn't mean he's going to end up there by the end of the game. You know, you can do some switches, you can move him over.
Second's his best position. He told me his best position is second base.
I think he probably believes that, and I think that's probably true. I think he could be a pretty decent third baseman. We'll see. We're going to find out. But I think he could be that. I think the majority of time...
What he can be is a batting champion.
He could do that. That's for sure. And that's, you know, listen, ultimately, that's what he cares about. And, you know, he wants to hit, and he's not going to be shy about going after. Well, he wants to be at the top of that lineup and set the stage, set the tableau for the bangers that follow him. So,
hey, listen, he hasn't gotten enough attention, and obviously we know why, okay? When you have a guy come in and hit 50 home runs, it's going to get attention, and he's a dynamic personality. But McNeil has a chance to be everything that they thought Greg Jeffries was going to be, everything that they thought that Murphy was going to be every year. This guy can be a legitimate 325, 330 hitter with 20 home runs.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. You know, you saw his power surge in the second half, and he's been asked that several times already about, what kind of hitter he's going to be this year. Is he going to be the first half average guy that we saw, or is he going to be the second half power that?
No, he's going to be a power hitter. He's going to be a guy who's going to hit, he's not going to hit 30 home runs, he's going to hit 20 home runs and hit 325.
I think he's a solid hitter. I think he's
That's what he would hit in a regular year. I shouldn't say that you got to prorate it to 60 games, but you know what I mean. The point is,
I think he's going to be a solid hitter, and I don't think he's a 40 home run guy. But
he's not. I think he's a 20 to 25 homer guy, but he's a legitimate star. He really is.
Yeah, I think he can be. I absolutely think he can be. He's a big part of the picture. I don't think there's any question. He's going to get his four at bats per game. That's the thing. That's why I think, I think he'll start a game mainly at third base, but that doesn't mean he might.
But is that is that going to take away from his hitting that he has to move around so much?
I don't think so. Honestly, Mike, I really don't. It does. I don't think anything fazes him, to be honest with you. I think he is so locked in when he goes up there to hit. That's what he wants to do. He loves to do it. I think it's in a sense like Murph. McNeil is a better defensive player than Murph was. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But he's, I think he's locked in there. I don't think it's going to bother him. It's not. I mean, if you were shifting around, if you had, if 7 games a week or whatever, and he's starting third, 2 games, starting second, another 2, starting in the outfield, another 2, that might, but I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I think the majority of his time is going to be at third base. That's my sense, anyway.
And also, I mean, I know Cespedes is there, but you'd like to find out exactly how good Davis is going to be. I mean, Davis really broke out last year.
He did. I think they want to get at bats for JD. Like I said, I think they want to find what is the limit for Cespedes. I think that's exactly what they want to find out here during this stretch before we start.
How has Cespedes looked?
He's looked fine. I think everybody has been a little overmatched by the pitching when you get into live BP. When you watch batting practice, Cespedes and Alonso and guys like that are clocking the ball and reaching the seats. He Cespedes looks terrific in batting practice. Now, he hasn't run a lot. I think you have to see that on a regular basis, and you've also got to see how he moves in the field. You know, that first step, very important out there. So I think you've got to see that. How has he looked? I think he looks great, honestly. He looks a lot better than I thought he would. But again, you know, he's had more time to get ready. I think we always, you know, considered him this year that if the season started on time, he's probably going to join you somewhere around the All-Star break. So we're there. Okay, we're pretty much at that point right now, and I think he looks pretty good. So you know that he wants to cash in his at bats, and you know he wants to put up numbers this year. And we'll see. You know that, but I would bank that he's going to have a pretty good offensive season. I would think so.
Here's a question. If he retires tomorrow, is Cano a Hall of Famer? He's a lifetime 302 hitter at second base. Nice. He's got 1,200 runs scored. He's got 320 homers. He's got 1,300 RBIs. He's a lifetime 300 hitter. He's won multiple Gold Gloves. He's finished in the top five or six in the MVP five or six times. Mm-hmm. As a second baseman, okay, I would think he's probably a Hall of Famer.
Here's my thought on it, and again, I think, you know, if he had progressed without the steroid problem, I think he's a Hall of Famer. I do think that he can overcome.
Oh, I'm not counting the steroid problem. Okay, if you want to bring him, I forget that he had that one thing where he got that one steroid issue the second half of the year. That's right. I got to take that out. But I think he's got Hall of Fame stats when I think of him. Like, I think he's been a good enough player when you look at him and realize the guy has almost 2,600 hits.
Right.
Now, if he gets 3,000 hits, if he hangs around for 3,000 hits, exactly. And I don't know if he will hang around for 3,000 hits. I don't know. You know,
he doesn't have time left in his contract.
He does. I don't know if he'll be around for it. But, I mean, the guy's already hit. He hasn't hit, you know, this isn't a guy who hits a couple of home runs. This guy's got 325 home runs.
Yeah. I think this has been my thought on him. And, you know, if he had progressed, you know, without the steroid thing, I think he would have been a Hall of Famer. My feeling is this, that I think what he needs to do is have a bounce back season this year, and, you know, just continue over the next couple of years. I don't know how many years he wants to play. Does he want to finish out this contract? Probably. Okay, so if he can play another 2 or 3 years and put up decent numbers, yes, I would think.
Well, then he's going to get 1,000 hits too if he does that. You know, I mean, 3,000 hits, which is automatic. If not counting the steroids. Here's the other issue: Cano's second half last year, his OPS was about 950 for the second half of the season. When he came back off the All-Star break, he was terrible in the first half. Until he got hurt in the second half, he was really hitting really well. Which Cano are we going to see? The guy in the first half, the guy in the second half?
Yeah, I I've only seen him in BP thus far. You know, he's looked fine and, you know, doing his work, slapping the ball around. You know, it was hard to judge Cano. I watched him last spring, not this, you know, past spring, but the previous one when he first got here, and he looked like the old Robbie Cano, you know, doing everything during spring training, and then the season started, and boom, you know, he just went nowhere. So I don't know what you're going to see and what you're going to get. I think he knows what's at stake for him this year, and I think that's, you know, it's an important year. It's a bounce-back year for him.
Yep.
You know, I know he's close to, you know, the 3,000 hits. Keep in mind, though, that I think Rafael Palmeiro also has 3,000 hits as well. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, that's because he's a steroid guy, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, same thing. You know, I forgot about Cano's year out there with the steroids, so you're right about that, too. But I think Cano's got something left. I really do.
I
thought the second half he looked like Cano. Now, I can't understand, you know, last year he had the great first game, and then he was dreadful for 3 months. So
right.
I don't know exactly what went on, but I thought the second half he really looked like Cano again. And, you know, he did hit like 11 home runs in the second half last year when he played until he got hurt. And, he only had like 390 at-bats last year for the whole year. So I don't know how much he plays this year. He probably plays, what, 5 out of 7 games a week or something like that?
Least,
you know?
Yeah, I think he's going to be out there on a fairly regular basis. That's my sense. You know, I don't think he's going to be sitting a lot. I think there will be games. I think that, you know, Luis Rojas will take care of him and want him to get some downtime. And I'm sure there'll be a few tussles on that, too. You know, Rob.
And who leads off on this team?
Who needs off?
Who leads off?
Oh, who leads? I think it's going to be McNeil, although, you know, Nimmo's right there. He's got great, always has great on-base percentage numbers, gets hit an awful lot, you know. But I think McNeil is going to be the guy that will be there at the top of the lineup. He likes to do it. He's very good at it and can drive the ball and also can give you some pop out of that spot, too. So I think he's going to lead off. But, again, you've got a couple of choices you can do, and you can – Yeah, Rosario, you can mix in there as well too if you need another guy.
So you're going to bat Rosario two and Cano down in the lineup, or bat Cano in the two spot?
Well, the interesting, you know, the thing is with, and I'm not sure how the Mets are going to do this, but you know they have a DH this year. They never have. It's National League. You know, do you go with having a guy, a good on base guy at number nine?
And, oh, you do. You definitely do. That's where you bat Nimmo, I think, is in the nine spot. You know that because he gives you that double leadoff guy.
Yeah, and it could be Rosario down there too as well. Although
he doesn't walk though.
Yeah, Rosario, he drove the ball very well in the second half. And
he hit well, but he's not a walk guy, though. He doesn't walk, though.
Yeah. No, you're right. He isn't.
So you'd like a double leadoff guy. I think Nimmo fills that, well, if he's playing. Sure. You know, if he's playing, I could see that. And and obviously, you know, the middle of the order is, but you think they'll bat McNeil leadoff?
I do, yeah. You know, another guy that you might watch, too, and again, I don't think he plays a major role, but I thought it was very interesting that they signed Melky Cabrera. You know, Melky is...
Melky will help them if they put him on the team.
He's a hitter and a switch hitter, and he's also a guy, you know, I think his lifetime average is 285. He's always
and you know who his buddy is.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
You know, they were inseparable, you know that.
Yes, I know. Yes. So I'm sure that helped, you know, in getting him here. As well, but they have some interesting options on the bench. Matt Adams is another guy too. He gives you some power. You know, he was in.
Will he make the team? I always liked him. I always thought he was going to be a good player. You know that I always thought he would have been a good Yankee player. But you know, but I always thought he was going to be better than he's been.
Yeah, no, he's he looked good in spring training before. He's here. He certainly gives you a left-handed bat off the bench and some power as well. So you know, that's another option.
Has Melky looked good?
What's that?
Has Melky looked good?
Yeah, I've only really seen him probably a day and a half, but he's looked fine. You know, he looks to be in shape, and you know, like I said, he can hit. So it's hard to tell right now with you know, when you watch the simulated games and that, the pitchers are well ahead of the hitters. You know, there have been some guys who have turned on balls and got the ball out of the park, but it's kind of hard to tell at this point. But I, you know, I think eventually the hitters will catch up, and I think all of them will get the number of at bats they need. So. Yeah, we'll see how it all evens out, but I think that you know, thus far they've looked pretty good. And I think one thing, you know, with the Mets, which has helped them thus far, they've been pretty healthy. They haven't you know, they haven't had. I think Brad Brock has not been here. He's one of the relievers, you know, so there may be something COVID with him. I'm not sure. He has not surfaced yet, but you know, you look around at the division. You know, Freddie Freeman is down at this point.
Markakis is out.
Markakis talked to him and decided to opt out. You know, Washington has been hit a little bit as well. So have the Phillies, for that matter. Nola's behind. So you know, the Mets have been a little bit ahead in that regard. I don't know if it continues that way. Hopefully it does. But you know, maybe that gives them a little edge. We'll see. But they've stayed healthy and they're doing the protocols and they have talent here. There's no question they have talent, and you know, they could and probably should be a playoff team if they play to their capabilities. So we'll see. See what happens.
I think the most important player on the Mets this year, other than the obvious, is Betances.
Could be. Yeah, could very well be. He's looked a lot better than what we saw in spring training, simply because he was just kind of ramping up at that time, and he was only throwing, I think he was below 90, I think, for the last time I saw him. But he's looked much better than that right now. He's probably not in tip-top shape. Or exactly where he wants to be, let me put it that way. But I think he's going to be close. He said he'd probably get somewhere about six or seven more turns. He pitched yesterday, and I think he'll be ready. You know, he's also looked very good as Familia.
Good luck. I don't trust him. Well, I don't trust him.
He's lost weight. You didn't trust Diaz either.
Well, listen, I'm on board. Listen, I'm on board. I think they should have traded Diaz. I don't think Diaz is ever successful here. I think that. I believe I will apologize to Diaz if he has a year like he had in Seattle 2 years ago. I think Diaz is going to lose the job as the closer this year. I do not think he's going to close in New York. That's my opinion.
All right, I think he's going to be okay. But again, there's no way for me to judge that at this point in time. We shall see over 60. But and I do think he is going to be the guy that they, you know, that they tap. But I also get the sense too that, you know, with the 60 games, they're going to use a lot of.
You can't let him give up 15 homers in the ninth inning this year, Eddie.
Well, that's absolutely. Well, I mean, if that starts again, Mike, it's going to be a short. Well, listen, I think everyone's got a short leash with 60.
Absolutely, games, have we ever seen a big reliever be worse than he was last year? My God,
it was awful. It was, you know, and especially when you consider from where it was the year before.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, I know. I know that was a disaster, and I don't think it's going to be that way this year. But again, you know, if you. You have a couple of blips in a row, that's going to affect. You drop down on the depth chart, I think, right away. And I think that goes for hitters, too. I don't think you can go, you know, 3-4 games with, you know, a 1-for-16. You know, you're going to be sitting in somebody else's, try to plug a bat in there to get them hot. I think that's just the way it is. You know, ordinarily, with a lot of veteran guys, you can ride them for a while and say, okay, I'll give you these 2 weeks and see where you are. Can't do that here, you know.
Weeks. 2 weeks if the sky doesn't fall, 2 weeks to baseball, you know.
We'll see.
But, yes.
Hopefully. I'm looking around the country. That's not enough.
It's a long 2 weeks. I agree. There's a lot that could happen. Absolutely. Thanks, Eddie. We'll chat.
See you.
Thank you. Bye. Eddie Coleman with the Mets, so we'll see. Hey, the Mets do have ability. I agree with that. I'm not a Diaz guy. I don't think Diaz is going to make it as their closer. But let's see. They're willing. I don't know how long they'll go with him. They clearly are committed to him to start, but let's see how it works out. Casamigos Tequila, as always, brings you the program, brought to you by those who drink it. We will see you tomorrow to wrap up a week on what is supposed to be a very, very rainy Friday. We'll see you then.